Valentine's Day is meant to be a day of love and affection, when we shower the important people in our lives with flowers, chocolates, and gifts to remind them of how much they mean to us. Well, in 1920s Chicago, they did Valentine's Day a little differently. Back then, the gangs ruled the city. Prohibition had turned booze into a black market item, and the mob had the market cornered. The more they sold, the richer they grew, and the more territory they were able to claim. This led to violent turf wars among the various factions, culminating in a massive struggle between the North Side and the South Side. Dion O'Banion controlled the North, while Johnny Torrio headed the South. Torrio wound up taking the initiative and had O'Banion whacked, resulting in the North Side shooting Torrio as revenge. But he survived. Unfortunately, he was too injured to remain at the top of his organization, so he passed the baton to his next in command, an up-and-coming mobster named Al Capone. With Capone in charge, the South Side retaliated by executing O'Banion's ally and new head of the North Side, Jaime Weiss. It went on like this for a while, tit for tat, back and forth, until eventually Al Capone on the South Side found himself up against Irish gangster George Bugs Moran in the North. Capone quickly rose to become the most powerful and dangerous gangster Chicago had ever known. With his operation bringing in $60 million a year, there was no one who could touch him. But half of Chicago wasn't enough for Capone. He wanted all of it, and that meant getting rid of Moran's gang once and for all. But Capone and his men couldn't just go in with guns blazing. As it so happened, Moran happened to be expecting a shipment of special bootleg Canadian whiskey at a garage on North Clark Street in Lincoln Park. He had a garage there, out of which he ran his bootlegging operation. On February 14th of 1929, at 10:30 in the morning, Moran's guys arrived at the garage ready to accept the shipment. Except it didn't show up. In its place were two police officers in a squad car. Moran's men lined up against a brick wall, as they were told, thinking that they were being raided. It was better to comply and let the cops go on with their investigation rather than take them on and risk the whole Chicago police force raining down on them. Except the raid never happened. Two more men, civilians, showed up with guns and they unloaded 70 rounds of ammunition into Moran's goons, killing them all and peppering the brick wall with bullets and blood. In total, seven guys were shot, six of whom were dead once the police finally showed up hours later. Frank Gusenberg, one of Moran's enforcers, lived long enough to be questioned about what had happened. He responded, "No one shot me," before succumbing to his injuries. Capone had been in Florida at the time, and so couldn't be charged with their murders. And just like that, he now sat at the top of Chicago's criminal underworld. Almost 40 years later, the garage was demolished and the bricks from the wall were sold off as collector's items. Some still even had their bullet holes and bloodstains intact. But there was something about the bricks themselves. Not only had they been changed physically by the St. Valentine's Day massacre, they'd also been changed spiritually. Those who had taken home souvenirs from the tragedy started to experience strange happenings of their own. From hauntings to falling ill with sudden diseases to terrible accidents, it seemed that the bricks were cursed. After spending the better part of a decade as a wall in a Canadian nightclub bathroom, a large quantity of the bricks were auctioned off. 300 of them now reside, also in wall form, at the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. And according to visitors there, the ghostly moans and cries of men have been heard inside, along with the sounds of gunshots. As for the garage itself, the lot it once sat on was turned into a side yard for a senior living facility, and residents have reported all kinds of bizarre occurrences there. Some have heard Thompson machine guns being fired, while one elderly woman grew agitated at the sight of gangsters going in and out of her room. She'd had dementia, so the staff hadn't paid her any mind, but they moved her anyway to keep her calm. But the new resident in her room was an older man who didn't have dementia, and he also claimed to have seen a man wearing a pinstripe suit and a fedora entering and leaving his room more than once. Dogs have been known to bark at the lot when passing by, and objects have been seen flying off of shelves and tables without warning. The St. Valentine's Day massacre didn't just leave an indelible mark on Chicago's history. Its effects continue to linger and to haunt its residents to this day. This episode of Lore Bites was produced by me, Aaron Mankey, with writing by Harry Marks and research by Jenna Rose Nethercutt, with music by Chad Lawson. Lore Bites are a perk offered only to our Patreon and Apple Podcast paid subscribers, as a thank you for such generous support. Look for new episodes each Wednesday morning. Be sure to follow the show on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just search for Lore Podcast, all one word, and then click that follow button. And when you do, say hi. I like it when people say hi. And as always, thanks for listening.